as they've done. Yes, if you eat the way that the food pyramid recommends, you can be healthy. But what do they typically focus on as far as in total? Like, here's some foods to eat and about the amount of servings, but what is the number one thing? What do they base all diets around?
Caloric intake.
Okay. What's the recommended caloric intake for the average American?
2,000.
2,000, based on a 2,000 calorie diet, right? Okay. Percentage there, 33% of your recommended vitamin C based on a 2,000 calorie diet. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we have calories, and calories are pretty woven into the standard American diet. People count calories, right? Do we agree? Everybody knows someone that's trying to hit their caloric total for the day, and a lot of times it's not with the best foods, but they're just trying at least to lower their total food intake, counting calories. Okay. So what's good also about the American diet is that we get a lot of influences from a ton of other cultures. So, we have awesome Mexican food, we have good Chinese, Japanese, like sushi and that type of food. We have
Korean barbecue
food. We're pretty much just a melting pot of different cultural eating styles. Is there any types of, any specific countries that you would say have a good diet or that typically eat something that keeps them a little leaner?
I wouldn't say it's a good diet, but when I was in South Korea, rice is every meal.
And is there typically a ton of overweight people in South Korea?
No, they're small and brittle. Yeah.
Small and brittle, okay. But and rice is a huge staple of their diet, right? Okay. Not the Oriental diet, or they call it the Asian diet. What's like where they eat rice and sushi, rice and fish, Japanese diet? Japanese? It's called something, but typically people from Japan are not very overweight when they focus on eating their sushi based, rice based diets. Okay.
And their cancerous diseases are low.
And then that might be due to the fact that they don't process their food as much. It's just simple white rice with some fish, raw fish, so it's not even cooked, just kind of right there. And that makes up a ton of their diet, seaweeds and stuff like that, a lot of raw foods.
One thing I noticed is they don't eat a lot of sweets over there.
And they don't eat a lot of sweets.
South Korea for several years, they don't eat a lot of sweets.
Yeah, and then they probably don't have a lot of options for sweets either, right?
Not that I've seen yet.
Cool. Okay, so when it comes down to it, the typical American diet is going to have a ton of influences, and the American diet in Alabama is going to be different from the American diet in Oregon or something. But overall, we typically tend to choose the more convenient options that might be a little bit more processed and not maybe be the best for us. Standard American diet, do we agree?
Mm-hmm.
A sad diet? Okay.
That's funny.
All right, so let's go ahead and get into what nutrients are. Page 11, or page 10, bottom of 10 and top of page 11. So there's classes of nutrients. We need to understand the, we'll say, six classes of nutrients in figure 1.8. Most people don't think of water as a nutrient, but it is. Okay, H2O is one of the most important nutrients to life on this planet, for sure. And so we need to consume water, right? Water is a nutrient. Good. What else do we have as nutrients? We have protein, okay? We have fats, and we have carbohydrates. What are those called?
Macronutrients,
okay? So macronutrients are the proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, okay? Then we have the, what's the opposite of macronutrient?
Micronutrients,
which are what?
Vitamins
and minerals, good. And all of these are going to play a role in our health. And eating them, all of them in total, should, in appropriate amounts, keep us nice and healthy. Okay. So, when we define those nutrients, we can also look at things, if in the bottom right of page 11, things like phytochemicals, which are basically, they call them substances in plants that may possess health protective effects, even though they are not essential for life, so extra, little extra phytochemicals. And then antioxidants, which are basically going to be vitamins and minerals that might reduce oxidative damage or prevent oxidative damage to cells. One of the most damaging things to our bodies is actually just oxygen exposure. It's basically called a oxygen molecule typically carries a negative charge, we'll say, in which an electron there's an extra electron, which is called a free radical. It's basically extra electrons in attached to molecules that are more or less damaging to our cells, meaning right now we're getting oxidative damage from the air, more or less. This is what causes aging, we'll say. So antioxidants are specific chemicals that grab these extra electrons and create a balance as opposed to a negative charge, in a way, causing less oxidative damage to be present to the cells of the body, which is kind of cool. Do we need to go crazy on antioxidants, though, and buy into all the marketing that says, oh, vitamin water has this many antioxidants?
No.
Probably not. No, and we'll explain that as we get further into this.
Is it true that something to do with antioxidants lowers your testosterone or some weird...
Are you reading that in there?
No, it's just something I've heard.
Not that I've heard
some
of.
Some way of just ruining gains or something. Had some like negative effect consuming a whole ton of antioxidants.
Well, the antioxidants are pretty simple. They're just vitamins and minerals. It's vitamin A, E, C, and selenium and zinc. They're just like some vitamins and minerals. It's anyone. They call them antioxidants, but it's mainly just vitamins and minerals.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a few select vitamins and minerals that are very antioxidant. All right. So then, as you get into page 12, we're going to look at what functions these tool or these nutrients have on our body. So pretty much, so we have carbohydrates to start. What are carbohydrates pretty much solely for?
Energy.
Good. So carbohydrates really, they provide about 4 calories per gram, which you will need to know for the test. 4 calories per gram on page 12. And carbohydrates are pretty much... Or they are only used to provide energy for the body. They make up no other process or anything in the body, just solely to provide energy. Does that mean that that's the only thing that can give us energy?
No.
No. Okay, there is other things that can give us energy. What else can give us energy?
Fats and oils.
Fats and proteins can also give us energy. Protein isn't as awesome at getting us energy because protein actually needs to be converted into a carbohydrate before it can give us energy. So it's not like you're going to eat a bunch of protein and then get a ton of energy spike right away like you would with a carbohydrate. Amino acids actually need to be chemically modified to then turn into a glucose molecule to be used. So protein can provide energy, but in a different way than carbohydrates a little bit. Okay. Fats are very, very energy abundant. That 9 calories per gram, which you would need to know for the test as well. 9 calories per gram. And what does that mean? It means there's 9 calories in 1 gram of the food. So if you look on the nutrition label, it says 1 gram of fat. Then it's going to have 9 calories associated with that 1 gram of fat. Okay. What other functions can these nutrients also work towards? Which is regulation of body processes are number 1 up there at the top, page 12 in that figure. Vitamins, lipids, or vitamins, fats, proteins, minerals, and water all help to regulate body processes. They are what you might consider the raw materials of the body that you need to survive 100%. If you miss some vitamins, if you miss fat, if you miss protein, if you miss some minerals, and if you miss water, you will die. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. If you don't have carbohydrates, can you survive?
Yeah.
Yes, you can. Okay. That's because you can get energy from fats and proteins as well. If you're looking to run a marathon at the fastest time ever, if you don't eat carbohydrates, is that probably going to be your best bet?
No.
No, because carbohydrates provide energy, and more energy means more fuel, and more fuel means more ability to push yourself to a performance standard. Okay, but most of us Americans, are we going for performance in anything? Athletically? Not really. Maybe about 30% of Americans even participate in recreational sports. Okay, so the amount of carbohydrates that were recommended might not be the perfect amount, but we'll see as we continue. And then the last function for these sort of nutrients are going to be contribute to cell and body structure. Literally, like the building house of the cells, or the framework that builds the cells and builds, we'll say, bone, and contains all the functional elements of living, of life. You need fats, proteins, minerals, and water. Okay. All right. So, what's the difference between organic and inorganic nutrients or molecules, we'll say? Organic is basically going to... So when we think of organic, what do we think of, typically?
Free-range.
I think of free-range chicken.
Chicken.
What do we think of when we think of organic?
Non-processed.
Okay, so not processed food that's not processed.
No chemicals,
no chemical additives, not used for, like...
All natural,
okay. When we think of organic, we think of more as nature intended, maybe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This organic is going to be different, and I want you to know the difference between the two. Organic literally refers to anything that contains carbon, except for carbon dioxide. Okay. Anything that contains carbon, any molecule that contains carbon, is going to be considered an organic molecule. And then it says further down there, the term organic also is used to denote crops that are grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemicals. And then inorganic is literally anything that does not contain carbon, or very simple carbon, things like carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. Salt, table salt, is sodium chloride, doesn't contain carbon, therefore it's considered inorganic. And if you look at the bottom left, you have all the organic versus inorganic molecules. What does that really mean? Carbon is the basic element for life to occur. Okay, we need carbon. Everything that's living is a carbon-based living organism on this planet, everything. Go team. All right, so it'll give you a little explanation on carbs, a little explanation on fats, a little explanation on proteins, a little explanation on vitamins. What do you need to know about carbohydrates? We're going to get more detailed as we get into the chapter on carbohydrates, so I'm not going to say too much about them. Fats. Maybe there's different types of fats, just like there's different types of carbs. And proteins, you have proteins come from different areas with different amino acid structures that make up different types of protein. And then vitamins, yeah. So what I really want you guys to know about the carbohydrates, proteins, fats, vitamins, minerals, water, is what they do in the body for this chapter. So they regulate body processes, contribute to cell and body structure, and supply energy. Which is from that figure 1.9 on page 12. All right. So energy and foods, looking at page 15. Foods have energy. What is a calorie, guys?
It's the unit of measurement for...
A calorie is a unit of measurement for energy stored in the food, right? Okay. Let's find out what a calorie really is. So, what is a kilocalorie and a calorie? Okay. So you can imagine that a calorie is a unit of heat energy. So how did they determine what a calorie would be? They determined, a calorie would be the unit of energy or heat energy. Unit of energy needed. This is going to be, let's do a kilocalorie since that's what we use in to measure everything. What's the difference between a calorie and a kilocalorie?
What is 1,000?
So kilo refers to 1,000 of an actual calorie. Okay, so an actual calorie is I'll explain here, but an actual calorie is small. We measure everything in kilocalories, like we would like a distance in a kilometer, kilometer. Kilometer.
So you could have like centicalories. And
you could have a centicalorie, yeah, but no, we don't. Nobody would use that in nutrition. So, so the unit of energy needed to raise. This is for a kilocalorie. Raise 1 liter. Of water 1 degree Celsius. So the unit of energy or the unit of heat energy needed to raise 1 liter of water 1 degree Celsius. So looking at page 15, a actual small calorie is the unit of heat energy needed to raise 1 gram of water 1 degree Celsius. So a kilocalorie would raise 1 liter, which is 100 grams, or 1,000 grams of water. Or, yeah, sorry, one liter. You're right. Thank you. 1 liter is 1 kilogram of water. Okay. All right, I might be doing that wrong, but it's 1 milliliter of water 1 degree Celsius.
Hold on. So is it 1 liter or 1 milliliter? Because that's a large.
It says
water,
gram, but 1 gram is the same as 1 milliliter. It's the same volume, we'll say.
Okay.
1 milliliter is 1 square gram of water. Okay, so a kilocalorie would be the energy required to raise 1 liter of water 1 degree Celsius. So if we add 1 liter of water, and we burn a carbohydrate, how many degrees would that water go up?
Four.
Four, because there's 4 calories, kilocalories, per gram of carbohydrate. That make sense to anyone? Kinda? A little bit? Not at all? which we'll get into further, but... yeah, so if you look at the right side of page 15, you have that little bucket of water, and to the right it says 1 kilocalorie is the amount of energy that will raise the temperature of 1 kilogram of water by 1 degree Celsius. Our bodies produce heat, correct? Okay, so if we were to produce heat on a regular basis, that means we would be needing to burn some sort of energy, right? Okay. This is why it's possible to measure our energy output in calories as well, based off of the amount of heat that we're giving off of our bodies. So they figure that since you can measure the body heat in calories, we should measure food and the energy that food contains in calories as well. And then you have a nice little system that has calories in equals calories out equals no change. Or calories in exceeding calories out means weight or fat storage or increase in weight, or calories in less than calories out, or sorry, more than calories, less than calories out would mean weight loss. Okay, but our bodies are not 1 kilogram of water, are they? No. Okay, but we'll get into that at another time. Okay, so understanding kilocalories, if you look at, yeah, how can we calculate the energy of the available foods? 39 grams of carbohydrates. So if I want you guys to know anything right now from this little section is how many calories per gram each of the macronutrients is. So each of the macronutrients, we have carbohydrates, is abbreviated CHO. How many calories per gram?
12.
Don't make me smack you.
Javi.
You said that in the beginning.
Did I say 12?
12 calories per gram. It provides 12 calories per gram.
No, 4.
I think I said 4. Hopefully I said 4. Four calories per gram. Okay? Carbohydrate is 4 calories per gram. A fat is how many calories per gram?
9
calories per gram. Okay? And then we have a protein is what?
4
again. Calories per gram. Okay? Meaning, which of the following macronutrients stores more energy?
Fat.
Does that make sense that if you eat more fat, you eat more calories?
Yeah.
Does it make sense why they might tell you to eat less fat?
Just math alone.
Based on math alone. Okay?
More than double.
But unfortunately, our bodies are not a liter of water, which we'll get into at another time. So, you can see why it's easy to villainize fat as being the one that makes people fat, right? Because if all calories are equal, then what has the most calories? Fat. Well, then what should you not eat the most of if you wanted to eat less calories?
Fat.
Okay. But, really quickly, this is just a contraindication, just to throw it out there. Look back at the function of the macronutrients. Look back at the function of the macronutrients. If, I'm going to prove something to you guys. This is called the law of thermodynamics, okay? Calories in is equal to calories out equals no weight change. That's called the law of thermodynamics. Okay? Now I'll go ahead and write that right here. The law of thermodynamics. Law of thermodynamics. Okay? If all macronutrients were equal, then they should all have the same function. Do we agree? But they don't, do they? No. Carbohydrates do what? What's the function of carbohydrates?
Energy.
Pure energy and only energy, right? Can it do anything else?
No.
Absolutely not. Carbohydrates, 100%, every ounce of carbohydrates that you have has to be used as energy, or what's going to happen?
Turn fat.
It's going to turn into stored energy, which will either be glycogen, but if your glycogen stores are full, meaning all the carbohydrate stores in your body are full, where is it going to go?
Fat cells.
Okay. It's going to turn into a triglyceride via glycerol backbone. Okay. And then fats and proteins don't only give energy, they do what?
They regulate body processes
and
contribute to
cell structure. So, if the law of thermodynamics is saying that all calories are equal and calories in versus calories out means that if calories in equals calories out, then there's no weight gain. Why is it so tough to lose weight on a low calorie diet?
Because your body's not getting what it needs to regulate.
Well, if you keep a low fat diet, you're going to struggle on some body processes and struggle on contribution to cell structure. If you peak and have the most in carbohydrates, you're going to have a ton of energy available, right? Do you need all that energy if you aren't being very active at all?
No.
Okay. So the first issue we run into with the law of thermodynamics and calories in general is the fact that 100% of fat does not go to energy. Probably only about half, if that, goes to energy. Because what is fat important for?
Structure.
Everything. Every single one of our cellular membranes in our bodies are made of fat. Phospholipids. Most of our hormones, guess what? They're fat-based. A ton of our cellular structure is just fat. Guess what our brain is?
Fat.
Mostly fat. Guess what covers all of our nerves? Fat. Okay, so if fat went 100% to energy, yes, then it's okay to demonize fat. But it doesn't. Okay. Nobody else is as excited as I am right now.
Yeah.
But,
have they figured out the ratio on that fat, how much goes to...
It'd be really tough to tell. You'd have to do a whole body analysis on every cell and how much fat is used to create phospholipid membranes, myelin sheaths, brain tissue, new cell formation. I mean, it would be so intricate and difficult, it would be near impossible. I'm sure maybe in the future they can.
But give or take, what,
50%? I'm not going to put a number on it. I'm not going to put a number on it just because I know that it would be a complete out of left field sort of guess.
For
3 to 10. But you have to understand that then you look at protein, and protein has to be turned into carbohydrates to even be used as energy. Does your body want to turn protein into carbohydrates for energy?
No.
What does it want to do with protein?
It wants to use it for gains,
right? Okay, it wants to build cellular structure. It wants to create new enzymes that build things. It wants to regulate body processes and, just build. Protein is a raw material. It's like it's the workers that literally build cells. Our protein.
Long Lego.
It's the long Lego. Okay, I like that. Okay. It's the foundation, you could say. So when we talk about the law of thermodynamics, we have to understand that calories are not equal. They're not. And that's our first mistake in attempting to lose weight based on a caloric theory. What's pretty much the number one way people try to lose weight in this country?
Calories.
Counting calories, eat less food. Okay, really quickly, let's look at the page 16. Where are we at? Okay. So, be smart. Calculate the percentages of calories in certain foods. Okay, what is the recommended macronutrient percentage intake in calories for carbohydrates? How many carbohydrates are recommended by the USDA?
By percentage?
Like 60.
By percentage, yes. What was it?
30?
60? 65.
So it's 45 to 65% of calories is recommended in carbohydrates as far as total percentage of total calories. What's recommended for fat right here in the middle section of page 16? Current health recommendations suggest that limiting fat intake to about 35%. Okay, that's right at the top paragraph under be food smart, calculate the percentage of calories of food on page 16. Okay. What's recommended for protein?
Like 10 to 35%.
So, when we have the highest percentage of calories going towards carbohydrates, and carbohydrates can only be used as energy. If we don't use that energy, what happens? It goes into the body as stored fat, or stored glycogen first, and then if once glycogen stores fill up, stored fat. Okay. All right. And then we eat less fat, maybe 20 to 35%. We have less raw materials to build cell structure and regulate body processes. If we eat less protein, we have less raw materials and less regulation of body processes, or raw materials for that. So does it make sense to limit our raw materials and eat more energy-based foods? No. Not necessarily, right? But yet we've been doing this for the last 30, 40 years, since about 1975, 1980. Actually, 1970-ish to 1980.
Is that when the triangle, the...
Food pyramid, yes, early 80s. Yeah. Started getting classrooms in early 80s. Because when you were taught, when you were raised, you didn't have any food classes or anything, nutrition,
really,
anything.
And I thought it was, for some reason, I keep thinking the 40s, but no, it didn't go back.
Yeah.
No, I didn't have any of that.
Yeah, because you didn't really need it back in 1922. Or... I'm joking, Art, I'm joking. Yeah, you didn't need that in 1960s.
No, man.
Because kids didn't have anything else to do but go run around and play. There wasn't an obesity epidemic.
My parents would fight to get us back in the house. That's
yeah.
all we wanted to do,
stay
outside. Stay
outside, yeah. And also the foods that you were eating weren't from the food industry, were they?
No.
I mean, there wasn't like a, hey, I mean, there was a little bit more in the 60s than it was like the 40s.
Processed
stuff.
Foods existed.
But processed foods were, I mean, what was your processed food?
Bologna.
Yeah, okay, yeah, maybe
slices of bologna.
Some bologna or deli meats, maybe like some cookies and stuff here and there. I'm sure the C&H lady taught your mom how to cook some cakes and snacks and candies in the bright pink package. C&H, C&H, mommy uses it to make her cakes. She makes the greatest cookies, snacks, and candies. In the bright pink package. Hey, at least I got your attention, brother.
These are old commercials.
I remember
yeah.
that one.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
They brought that one back for when I was a kid, and I was like, yeah.
I think we're probably in the same age group.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
You can guess.
I remember that at all.
Okay. See this face? There it is. Nice.
Deceptive.
Yeah, this is pure deception right here. Okay, so now they talk about, so we have our macronutrient ratios, which is 45 to 65% of calories from carbohydrates, 20 to 35 for fats, and then 10 to 35 for protein. And then it gives you little estimations on page 16 in percentage of 2,000 calorie diet, and it asks you to do a little bit of math there, and it shows you the example below. So it says 55% of 2,000 calories is 1,100. 1,100 divided by 4 is going to be 275 total grams of carbohydrates. Okay. I could see why America's obese. Okay, if they were eating perfectly pure glucose in like rice and or potato starch or pure starches, you wouldn't have the same obesity epidemic.
Meaning a complex carb.
Not necessarily just a complex carb, because when people think of complex carbs, they think of whole grains. I'm talking pure starch. Like, well, yeah, okay, complex
rice.
Carb. Complex carb. I'm thinking potatoes, starchy foods, I mean, rice is pure glucose, I'm basically saying things without sugar. You wouldn't have that same sort of thing because there's an insulin effect and a hormonal response to eating higher carbohydrates in sugar and fructose like sodas and crap like that that are going to lead to obesity. We aren't getting pure 275 grams of carbohydrates in good forms. We're getting them in processed sugar form leading to, just storage. Your body's really good at dealing with glucose. It doesn't really like to store pure glucose. So if you eat pure glucose, you aren't really going to go going to gain a lot of fat. And this is exactly the example in super high rice concentrated diets in the Asian culture. It's pure glucose, so they don't have any sugar associated with it. And that's a hormonal issue, which we'll talk about. But okay, so obesity, a public health crisis. Oh, no. So what do they say the number one cause of obesity is? Well, eating too many calories while not getting enough physical activity. Basic. All you have to do is just go get active. It's not the food system, guys. It's not anything to do with the food system. It's just going to be the fact that you're not exercising enough.
Do you think there's a level of activity that exists that would compensate for the amount of carbohydrates that they want you to consume?
Correct. So with the amount of carbohydrates that they want you to consume, they want you to do 1 to 2 hours of exercise a day.
Pro athletes or something.
Yeah, I mean, which is just a solid athlete. Okay, do I even get more than 1 hour a day of cardio on average per day? Not really, probably just under. Maybe 6 hours a week of cardio. And that's with me being pretty active in a sport, too. Yes, sir.
I like this first sentence.
Oh, what's the first sentence?
Americans and Canadians.
Americans and Canadians are getting fatter, guys.
That's just nice.
Our friends south of the border are lean and good.
The Mexicans, not so much.
The asterisk says there's not enough statistical information on the Mexican culture to right now.
Pick and choose the right battle there, I guess.
Yeah. But yes, according to this, Americans and Canadians are getting more overweight, and, well, that's because people are eating too many calories and not exercising enough. That means because they are choosing to have a less active lifestyle due to homework, school, and other stuff, and their genetics. Heredity plays a large role in determining how susceptible people are to being overweight and obese. And then their genes, you know, they influence how one burns calories and stores fat. It's genes.
Genes.
Okay. So these factors are what are leading to the obesity epidemic. Anybody ever heard of the obesity epidemic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 33% of the nation is considered obese, which is obese on a BMI scale means you are
height to weight.
25 to 30 pounds overweight. That's what they say. And not this type of overweight. So then they say, well, now we gotta apply the scientific process to nutrition. We gotta study nutrition. We gotta find out why people are getting fat. Well, what's the best way to do that?
Ask.
Well, no, we should
monitor them.
We need to, yeah, maybe monitor some people, but how can you monitor people and guarantee you that they're eating?
Assessments.
That's tough. I don't think we're allowed to.
So the best way to study nutrition, I'll give you the best case scenario, is to lock people in a space, feed them only food that you want them to eat, and then monitor their health.
Prison.
Prison.
They do leave jacked, some of them.
Prison, okay? We'll just say prison. Okay? Or maybe a mental health institution where people are locked in a room. Is it ethical to lock anyone in a room and feed them only certain foods?
No. Not in the U.S.
Not in the U.S. Miguel's like, I know some places.
What the hell we want.
No, it's not very ethical, so is that going to be very possible to lock people in a room and feed them specific foods and see how they respond to them without any other factors getting in the way?
It's gonna be hard.
Okay, what's gonna get in the way if you don't lock someone in the room?
Life
is gonna get in the way. Yeah. What happens in life?
Variables.
Free will. What other variables might get in?
Cultural.
All the ones we talked about. Remember?
All the ones we talked about. Social pressure to eat foods. Drinking alcohol.
Sensory.
Exercising or not exercising. The ability to stick to a diet, even. Like, is someone 100% guaranteed to eat only the foods that you tell them to? No. Even I. 100% of the foods that I tell myself to eat, I still eat something bad every once in a while, right? And I'm fine. Pretty good. So, What's the best way that we can study nutrition? Well, according to the science-backed institutions, we need to do epidemiological studies, because what we can do is hit hundreds of thousands of people in a simple, easy-to-monitor way and get an idea of what their basic health is. Okay, so let's go over what an epidemiological study is. An epidemiological study, does anybody know what that is?
Huge study.
A massive study that gets hundreds of thousands of people. And what does it do?
Provides compares disease relationships.
Okay, it provides information about specific relationships to certain, maybe disease to food, or age to disease, or age to weight, or anything like that. Okay. Yeah, just try to create relationships between items. For instance, let me give you an example of an epidemiological study. About 4 years ago, 3 years ago, the LA Times posted on the front page of their newspaper, red meat increases your increases your risk of all cause mortality or of death by 33%. Front page of the LA Times 4 years ago, I forget which day. This massive statement. If you eat red meat, you will die. You're 33% more likely to die.
I mean, okay.
Just die of heart disease, or die of cancer, die of just all-cause mortality. They just said death in general. Earlier or something, before the age of 55, I don't know. And so they post this, and they say, due to a recent epidemiological study based out of this group, 33%, or you're 33% more likely to die if you eat red meat. Okay. Then it goes into all the way that they conducted it. And it turns out they sent a survey to 200,000 people in the nation and asked these people, here's a survey. What did you eat over the last year?
Oh my God.
No, seriously, this is dead serious. And then it goes, how many times per week did you eat vegetables? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, 10 plus something, whatever. Yeah. How many times per week did you eat fruits? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 plus. How many times per week did you eat red meat? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 plus. And then under red meat, it has asterisk. Red meat is defined as hamburgers, cheeseburgers, hot dogs, tacos, meat tacos, pizza. Then it goes steak.
That's
lamb.
That's going to get skewed super high.
So if you're telling me how many times a week did I eat pizza and you're counting that as red meat because it had a little piece of pepperoni on it, you're telling me that you include that in red meat? Well, that's what this epidemiological study did. And so the people that eat hamburgers, cheeseburgers, and pizza, are they more likely to die? Duh. Okay? Duh. I mean, but yet, what does this epidemiological study do? It says, steaks will kill you. Red meat.
Just said pizza and hamburgers.
Pizza, hamburgers, hot dogs, crap processed food will kill you. Yes, everybody knows that. Okay? But yet, on the front page of the LA Times, they were able to say, red meat will kill you 33% faster. So that's what epidemiology is. It's trying to relate certain lifestyle habits to certain disease, typically. Or relate certain disease to certain lifestyle habits. So it goes to all the people that have cancer. Hey, all the people that have cancer, what did you eat over the last year? How many times did you have this? 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 Oh, look, the people that it turns out, compared to normal population, people that had cancer ate more red meat. That means red meat causes cancer. They're determining causative effects that slightly correlate to each other. It's like red meat causes cancer. That's the type of statements that they're able to say using epidemiology. Guess what? Every piece of nutritional advice that you have gotten from childhood has been based on an epidemiological study. Does that make you super excited to eat what's recommended?
No.
I'm just saying. Okay, so epidemiological studies, it's going to get you a little bit into that. There's animal studies that have been done based off certain foods, and it's animal cruelty sort of stuff. But feed rice to chickens and determine if it's bad. Feed this to animals, you know, blah, blah, blah. Feed this to monkeys, see what happens, and then do some basic results off that. Not too many of those are done. They used to be done a lot more often because animal rights activists were not as popular back then. Then you have cell culture studies. So basically, like, on a cellular level, feeding cells specific types of food and then determining the health of the cell might be a little bit more believable, in my opinion. But how does, like, certain nutrigenomics affect cellular processes, okay? Meaning, does a cell function optimally if it has this type of food versus this type of food, or glucose in this form versus fat in this form, you know, and it does stuff in that sense. And then human studies, you can have a case-controlled study in which you're trying to get someone to eat a certain way, but you can't guarantee 100% that they ate a specific way, or exercised, or didn't exercise. So it's really easy for them to say, and the epidemiological studies around exercise matter too. For the fitness people that are like, I exercise once or twice a week. Or no, let's say they give an epidemiological study to exercise and health. Okay? Exercise and health. How many times per week do you exercise? 1 to 2. Or 0 to 1. 1 to 2. 3 to 4. 5 to 6. The people that check the 5 to 6 box have less risk for disease. Do the people that... Does that guarantee that fitness then prevents disease? It doesn't guarantee anything. Because people that typically exercise often, more often, do they typically eat better too?
Yep.
People that care about their health, do they exercise and eat well?
Yes.
So how can you correlate or create any causation based off of that sort of epidemiological study? But they still try to. Okay. All right. What else? So placebo effect. Placebo effect's super simple. They just talk about how, this is moving on to page 21. A placebo effect is basically saying that you are taking something that's active and going to help you. And it's nothing, it's a sugar pill or something. Okay. So your mind has the effect that, or has the thought that you're getting better or getting healthy, and you actually get better and healthy. Kind of crazy. See, maybe you've heard of the placebo effect?
Yeah,
you can read a little bit more about that if you want. From research study to headline, this is like kind of what I was talking about with the Los Angeles Times article. How does it go? So it goes from page 23. We'll look at figure 1.2, sifting facts and fallacies. So this is how it goes. It goes from primary sources, so a journalist is going to write something. Okay. Then it goes to secondary sources, scientific magazines, articles based with primary source material and written by specialists. And then the scientists and science writing, you have generalists and magazines and newspapers that create articles written by science writers, and then the mass media. So it does have to go through a few steps before it can get published in mass media to prove that it's got scientific backing, and those are the steps that it has to go through. So basically, if it gets to the media, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's 100% true, but it has been tested enough to where they can see it might have some scientific backing, more or less. Does that make sense? But that doesn't mean you should trust anything. All right. Page 25, complete study questions 1-9 is your homework. And any questions as we finish up chapter 1?